Love for Matteo had been one of the overwhelming wonders of her life. She was worried for him. He was living in Milan with a girl who made him unhappy, and she was fretting over this when the car hit her. Lying on the pavement of Wigmore Street with concerned bystanders all around, she knew there was no way out from this. She was just 60 years old, although it had probably been a long enough life. Yet suddenly it all seemed like an illusion, a dream that had happened to someone else. What an odd thing existence was. There was to be a royal wedding. Even now, as she lay on this London pavement with these kind strangers around her, a sacrificial virgin was being prepared somewhere up the road to satisfy the need for pomp and circumstance. Union Jacks draped everywhere. There was no mistaking that she was home, at last. "This England," she murmured. 1950. "Mr. Toby! Mr. Toby!" Juliet came up from the underground and made her way along Great Portland Street. Checking her watch, she saw that she was surprisingly late for work. She had overslept, a result of a late evening in the Belle Meuniere in Charlotte Street, with a man who had proved less and less interesting as the night had worn on. Inertia, or ennui, perhaps, had kept her at the table, although the house specialties of viande de boeuf Diane and crepe Suzette had helped. Her somewhat lacklustre dinner companion was an architect who said he was rebuilding post-war London. "All on your own?" she had asked, rather unkindly. She allowed him a brief kiss as he handed her into a taxi at the end of the night. From politeness rather than desire, he had paid for the dinner, after all, and she had been unnecessarily mean to him, although he hadn't seemed to notice. The whole evening had left her feeling rather sour. "I am a disappointment to myself," she thought, as Broadcasting House hove into view. Juliet was a producer in schools, and as she approached Portland Place, she found her spirits drooping at the prospect of the tedious day ahead. A departmental meeting with Prendergast, followed by a recording of Past Lives, a series she was looking after for Joan Timpson, who was having an operation. "Just a small one, dear." Schools had recently had to move from the basement of Film House in Wardour Street, and Juliet missed the dilapidated raffishness of Soho. The BBC didn't have room for them in Broadcasting House, so they had been parked across the road in Number 1, and gazed, not without envy, at their mothership, the great, many-decked ocean liner of Broadcasting House, scrubbed clean now of its wartime camouflage and thrusting its prow into a new decade and an unknown future. Unlike the non-stop to and fro across the road, the school's building was quiet when Juliet entered. The carafe of red wine that she had shared with the architect had left her with a very dull head, and it was a relief not to have to partake of the usual exchange of morning greetings. The girl on reception looked rather pointedly at the clock when she saw Juliet coming through the door. The girl was having an affair with a producer in the World Service and seemed to think it gave her license to be brazen. The girls on school's reception came and went with astonishing rapidity. Juliet liked to imagine they were being eaten by something monstrous. A minotaur, perhaps, in the mazy bowels of the building. Although actually they were simply transferring to more glamorous departments across the road in Broadcasting House. "The Circle line was running late," Juliet said, although she hardly felt she needed to give the girl an explanation, true or otherwise.
"Again?"
"Yes, it's a very poor service on that route."
"Apparently so."
The cheek of the girl.
"Mr. Prendergast's meeting is on the first floor," the girl said. "I expect it's already begun."
"I expect it has."
"A day in the working life," Prendergast said earnestly to the rump assembled around the table.
Several people, Juliet noticed, had absented themselves. Prendergast's meetings required a certain kind of stamina.
"Ah, Miss Armstrong, here.